مصطفى محمد.
اللهم صل
على محمد وعلى بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، لا سيما بقيه الله في الارضين روحي وروح العالمين له الفداء. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقده من لساني يفقه قولي. Can everybody hear my voice, or should I pull this closer? Can you? No?
Bring the speaker to the front. Mashallah. Hi, guys.
Hey,
So, we okay now? Can you hear me? وجاهد في الله حق جهاده ولا تأخذك في الله لومة لائم. The translation is this: and wage jihad in the way of Allah, a jihad that is worthy of Him. And do not let the censure of any censurer stop in the way of Allah. Now, these words are not part of any terrorist manual, and I'm not here to get you guys to home and hatred and get myself banned from England or disobeyed from England. These are the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen, and this is part of his wasiyat to his son. This wasiyat is known also as letter number 31 in Nabshawalah. But this letter was written at the end of the life of Amir al-Mu'mineen. One of the nice things about this letter is that it was not written in such a way that it was from one imam to another. Because there's a question among scholars as to, was this letter written to Imam Hassan alayhi salatu wasalam, or was it written to Muhammad Hanafiya? That's a question among scholars. Whoever was written to, those who have done commentary on the letter and have observed the letter from close say that the terms that the Imam has used in this letter are terms that for he's speaking in such a way that he's not speaking from an Imam who's ma'asum to an Imam who's ma'asum. He's not even speaking from the point of view that I am ma'asum speaking down to someone who's not ma'asum. Rather, the way that he's speaking as an old father who's talking to his son, a father who's at the end of his life, talking to his son, is now in the prime of his life and ready to begin and start doing things. So what that means is that this is a letter which was written to youth, not just a letter that was written to a youth. Because of that, the miracle will go over and benefit from this letter much more. Because otherwise, if it was the words of one imam to another imam, then that would be something that would be beyond our imagination and even understanding. The imam is, says in hadith, that no one from the ummah can be compared to all imam. There's no one. So now, if they were to give each other advice on that level, we wouldn't even be able to understand. Now, the reason I've chosen this little part here is that we are the soldiers of the 12th Imam, inshallah. We are the Ummah, we are now in the Akhira Zaman, and now we are reaching towards the final victory. It's closer and closer to the final victory. But now, when we're coming to get ready to accept this greatest gift of Allah, this amanat of Allah, which is the presence of the Imam and the government of Islam all over the face of the earth, it is natural that the exams and tests will become harder. The bigger the ni'mah, the bigger the blessing, then it's obvious that Allah is going to go over and make the test harder. We've got to show ourselves to be deserving of having our Imam and having him be present with us. So, there's an ayah of Quran that gives us hope in this situation. What is our situation right now when we're at a time which is critical for the Ummah? There's pressure on Muslims all over the world. Some of us who are now Muslims in the West are feeling some of the pressures that other Muslim brothers and sisters, fellow Shias, and even non-Shias have been feeling for years, where we are disliked. To a certain extent, they're talking about us, they're putting pressure on us, they're going to start arresting people. What happens is that all of these things are signs of us getting closer and closer. The Quran tells us like this. It says, لَا يَغُرَّنَّكَ تَقَلُّبَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا فِي الْبِلَادِ. The ayat of Quran, talking to the Prophet of Allah, a message for all of us, Allah, that do not let the hustle and bustle of the kuffar moving around in the countries, don't let that fool you. On the outside, it seems like the kuffar are very powerful. They move in, they take over country, they kill people, they shoot bombs. But on the inside, if you know the real story, you'll know that the kuffar is now becoming weak, and they're sensing their weakness. I was translating an article written by a Christian priest on how to fight against Islam. The words he used with this, he was trying to present a strategy for how we should defeat Islam and what we're supposed to do. But he was saying that how we penetrate these, the words he used were seemingly impenetrable boundary of Islam, so that not only has Islam not retreated, he was going over talking, the way that the enemy feels in their inner circles is that you as Muslims are winning again and again and again. You should have seen the newspapers, maybe some of you have, after Abu Ibrahim Ja'fari, who is now has a position in Iraq, I guess he's the prime minister of Iraq now, if I don't make mistakes, the Iraqi brothers can correct me if he's a president or the prime minister, at least the prime minister. He came over to Iran and he visited with Ayatollah Khamenei. So then after that, the newspapers were so furious that now we've gone over and we have our own soldiers over there fighting and dying in Iraq, and they're going to make another Islamic State. Furious! Or if you see what's happening now with Iran, alhamdulillah, the new president who's coming, there's a great hope for us. The new president who's coming, Ahmadinejad, is a great hope for us and for the Ummah. For himself, when he came in, the nuclear discussions, Iran's trying to create the peaceful nuclear technology, and they're feeling like Iran is winning all of these games. For us, why Iran? No, Iran meaning Islam is winning. So we've had victories in Iran with the Islamic Revolution, and then what's happening up until now. Then also in Iraq, we're having victories. That's what the enemy is feeling, that they're losing despite their efforts. In Lebanon, of course, we were victorious. And now even in Palestine, where, I don't know if you've been following the news, but the Israelis are finally going to pull out after 38 years of occupation. And since Sayyid Nasrallah came here to Iran, and he was saying that this was a victory for the muqawama, for the resistance. What was the lesson that was learned from the time of Imam Khomeini and then passed on to Lebanon, and then now is even amongst the Sunni brothers and sisters over there in Lebanon, that they're forcing Israel out. And Netanyahu was so furious, he quit his position over this move. So we're not getting anything, we're only losing. So what happens is that the Islamic movement, the global Islamic movement, is moving forward. The enemy sees that and is frightened by that. The pressure then comes down on the Muslims. If they didn't think you were anything, if they didn't think you were important, if they didn't feel any pressure, then they wouldn't have anything to do with you. But now that they're afraid of you, the pressure comes down. At the time of the Prophet, Allah, for the first 3 years the Prophet was teaching in secret, then the Prophet went over and started to open up his message, then the pressure started to come down greater and greater until probably finally the Prophet went to the left. So for us, we welcome the pressure, not worry. For us, they say in Farsi, harakat-e mazbuhane. What that means is, like, harakat-e mazbuhane is an action which is done by, let's say, a slaughtered animal. Like, you go and you take a goat, right? I don't know if any of you guys have sacrificed an animal. You sacrifice a goat. The goat starts to kick its legs and stuff like that. And it's moving and it's thrashing. But it's not. It's dying. It's dying. So, and again, this doesn't mean that all of goats are dying. No, because we're here to save mankind. We are here to save mankind. We are the greatest friends of mankind. But kufr, which has been holding people back and subjugating people, that is starting to feel its weakness. So the pressure is coming down on us. Now, because of that, then now we need the teachings of Amir al-Mu'mineen to use these times to go forward spiritually. The pressure that comes down on us, to use this as a means of us getting closer to Allah, getting closer to the Imam, readying ourselves to take on the Imam of Allah. So the Imam goes over in the words he used when he's talking to his youth. One of the sentences is says, وَجَاهِدْ فِي اللَّهِ حَقَّ جِهَادِهِ, that go over and wage jihad in Allah. They've made the word jihad so bad that now you feel like if you go over and say jihad, then you're not a terrorist. Jihad is struggle. There are many types of jihad. Part of it is when we go over and either defend ourselves or go over and free oppressed people. Jihad-e-ibtidai, as they say, the offensive jihad, when we go over and save the oppressed. And that's another example of the rahmat of Islam. But they've made it out like we're terrorists. But there's also many other types of jihad. Same with it. Let's say we were going to wage a military jihad. Sometimes you fight with a sword, sometimes a spear, sometimes a double-edged sword, sometimes an axe, a mace. Also, when you're waging jihad, there are different types of jihad. Our jihad right now, one of the jihads that we should be going, is a four-point strategy, which is part of the social aspect of Islam. The social aspect of Islam, but we're using it again to get closer to Allah. 4 points that we need to start going from now. So our question is, when we want to talk about the 12th Imam, what can we do to bring the Imam here now? How can we help the Imam now? four points. If we can do these, then it will be very helpful. One of them, because we're saying that the types of weapons are different, the types of jihad is different, so this type of jihad is also. One of them is this, to take pride in being a Muslim. To be happy to be a Muslim. Not to let the attacks of the media make us feel ashamed of our Islam, make us hide our Islam, make us not practice openly, to feel that pride and to be happy to be a Muslim. Secondly, to practice Islam openly, which is going to become increasingly more difficult because you're identified as a Muslim, and then later on when the pressure starts to build, then sometimes you're not sure if you want to be identified as a Muslim. If they just think you are, I don't know, Asian or whatever, then it's easier. So the second thing is to practice openly. The third thing, right? The third thing is to go over and to talk about what Islam is. Talk about what Islam is. And the third thing is going to be to invite people. The fourth thing, sorry, is to be to invite people to Islam. Which means that you go over and you seek out those who you think might be inclined towards Islam, and if you can, you try and call them to the message. For the others who you don't feel you can do that, at least you go over and you talk about Islam when an event happens, when there's an excuse, when it doesn't seem like you're forcing your religion on them, you go over and you talk about the principles in Islam, the beautiful concepts in Islam. We'll talk about that, inshallah, in a little bit more detail, but one thing I wanted to bring up was what I mentioned last night. There was a poll that was taken after these July 7th attacks. They wanted to find out what the Americans were feeling towards Muslims. But this is useful for us, no matter where we are, because if it's in England, then later on after these attacks, what will they be feeling later on is also we can go over and find out a little bit of that from the poll. The poll, the name of the poll was that Americans' views on Islam are warming. They found that the percentage of Americans who had a favorable opinion of Muslims continued to rise. They said that it was 45% before 9/11. So these guys are so clever, right? Before they attack, they go over and find out, you know, what Muslims think, what they think about Muslims. Then have these bombings happen. Then go over and check again. Now what are you thinking? So they said after that, this was in March 2001, they went over and they asked. Then it was 45%. After that, then in July 2007, they said it was up to 51%, despite the, like, in, over in
2007.
Wow. 2003. So forgive me if I said 2007. And they said now it's at 55%. Right? So what happens is that now the Muslim, the people's opinion, despite the attacks of the media and blaming the Muslims and talking about them and spreading it to Islam and saying that all of Islam is a terrorist religion, again the effect is the opposite. This is another point though that's interesting for us. It says that they found the more respondent knows about Islam, the more likely he or she is to regard Muslim Americans favorably. Unfortunately, there's a principle that we're taught by the Apple Bay. The hadith I mentioned last night said that annas a'da'u ma jahilu. People are enemies of that which they have ignorance of. They don't know you, it's easy for them to hate you. They don't know who you are, they see you have a beard, you're sitting in a corner, you're talking some foreign language. They don't know. But if they know you as a Muslim, they know what you think, what you feel, they've seen you at work, at college, then the more they know about Islam, the more likely they are to think favorably about Islam. They had some other things that they found interesting. They said that the Americans, they refused to consider themselves at war with Islam. Another effort, which I think was a concerted effort in the media, was to make this a war between Islam and the West. But they said, again, that they didn't, that more people felt that it was only a small minority, a radical element. But unfortunately, they said two-thirds of Americans said they still knew little or nothing about the religion. Little or nothing. To the extent that most of them, barely half, could identify the Quran as being the equivalent of the Bible. There's other little points, but this is not our main discussion. What happens is that they don't know you. Non-Muslims, to a great extent, they don't know you. Even Our Sunni brothers and sisters, to a great extent, do not know you as Shias. They've heard things, how bad you are, what you think, and stuff like that, but they don't really know you. So one of the flaws, like I was telling you guys last night, is that one thing that I've observed, and you can check for yourselves, is that we as Shias don't go over, we don't introduce Islam enough to the outside world. We keep it to ourselves. If we're religious, we practice, then inside our same ears. But going over and calling people to the path, looking out for others, trying to bring the message, we need to do more of that. Alhamdulillah, some efforts have been made, but we need to do more of that. Which means us as the individuals, the foot soldiers of the Mahdi, need to go over and do that. One of those things is just to talk about Islam. Not to, because this was my strategy, because I know that in America, a lot of people don't like to be converted, that you're coming over, please become a Muslim. So, a situation would come up where I'm a Muslim openly, and they had a question about Islam, and I talk about it. Yeah, we Muslims here. And you'd be surprised at how strong the logic is of the Ahlul Bayt, the path of the Ahlul Bayt. That you can go over and sit down with one of the Kuffar and have a talk about offensive jihad and convince the Kuffar that it's logical and it makes sense and it is a good thing. And it, because the message of the Ahlul Bayt is so powerful. So when we hear that we should go over and get a deeper understanding in our religion, it's because we understand the beauty of our religion and we're able to explain it to others. And they can also grasp and understand it. At one stage, they're not accepting it. We're not saying, please come over. They're just listening. But they can find that it's very interesting, this Islam. The survey said that the more they know about Islam, the more likely that this is with the ignorance that we're facing now. Just a little bit of education that's going on, some fair reports and Muslims coming out and saying that, look, all of us aren't terrorists, and then we're seeing the results. Imagine if Muslims would go over and take it on as a public relations campaign. Let's get out there, let's talk to people, let's bring them in. We're proud of being Muslims, we're happy to be Muslims, we wish everybody else. Like, so that was the poll. Now, the point that I was going to try and use, again, we'll see how much time we have, because I don't want to take all of your time here, is they say that the next step, so the first step is to go over and to do this jihad. To go over and take it as a duty on ourselves to go over and get the message of Islam out there to the rest of the world. That is something that we realize we're not going to leave it on the shoulders of our ulama. Please, ulama, yes, it's time. The crowns are ready. Get out there in the streets. No, they see you and the imam and they run. You know, they don't want to leave, you know. They see you, know. Usama bin Laden, come over with Usama. My name is Usama. But if you go over, they know you. You're friendly. You talk to them. You'd be surprised at the effect that you can have. You'd be surprised. There's no time here. I can go over and give you some personal experiences. We still got a little bit of time. One personal experience to go back into our own discussion. One personal experience. I was on the airplane and I was getting to go to LA for the first time in my life. So I'm sitting in the airport and I have a Kasabi in my clothes. So I'm not dressed in these clothes, obviously. And I'm sitting. So now a white lady comes over to speak to me. Older lady, maybe around 50 years old. So she asked me, you know, the flight went to LA, blah, 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 we start talking. So what I did was I didn't cut off the, I didn't say yes! And just end the conversation. Flight this, and then. So then, you know, the lady starts to ask me some questions, stuff like that, and I know that I'm trying to do Kabbalah. So I go, studying in Iran. Iran? I have many questions. She comes and she sits down next to me. I'm going, we sit down, we're talking again. What do you believe about women and this pressure? And then, yes, yes, go. But then after that, she stays with me. We walk and we're in the air, the line, waiting for the plane. We go on the plane. Our flight, we're talking about every issue in Islam that you can imagine. People want to know. One tiny example, forgive me, and then after we go into our discussion, one more tiny example. I went to, you know, because I get carried away, right? But I was in San Jose, Mojave. Then after that, a sister came to me after the speech. She said, look, we're going to invite some third graders to come over to our center. Now, I wanted to see if you have time, you can come to the center with me, and we'll talk to the people, because I'm not sure if I have enough knowledge to answer all the questions and stuff like that. You come over, and you talk. So I go over, this time I'm wearing the clothes and everything. We go over, the sister takes me over to the center, they've gone over, they're ready, they already have, they got little leaflets together and stuff like that. As soon as they come in, they hand out the leaflets, they start explaining, I'm a Muslim, salamu alaykum, means this, that, the other. The people are all impressed, little kids, and they're there with their family members. So they carpools. So then they come over, welcome to the center. The center is very beautiful. They go over, they bring them around, stuff like that. You go over into the prayer hall, and it's Muharram. So they've got all the Allah, the banners and stuff like that on the wall. What are these banners? The story. So you go over and I give them the story of Karbala. What is, you know, one group of people over fighting them. And the kids are in it. Yes, questions. Right? After that, then, for us, too, this is like a golden opportunity. After that, they were so grateful that the sisters, they were clever too. What they did is, you have a hadith that says, Tahadu, Tahadu. It says, give school love one another. So after the meeting was over, the sisters went over and they had these little mugs of the Islamic Center. So they went over and they gave them, each one of the children, their parents. So grateful, so happy. They were shaking my hand, appreciate it. And I'm telling the sisters, well, I can't shake your hand. They can understand that. You know, oh, please, no. Hold your ground. When you win them over, then hold your ground. It's like, I'm a Muslim, you smile. I'm sorry, I'm not able. And they can understand that, oh, you're different. Yes. Yes, I'm different. And I'm happy to be different. What happens is that they were so happy and encouraged, and they were thanking me from the bottom of their hearts. I was like, I should be thanking you. I said, you could have learned about us from Fox News. You came here to a masjid. So the thing is that the opportunities are there. The grounds are open. Now it's time for us to move forward, to show some little effort from ourselves, to show if we're going to try and bring people into the religion, or at least get the message out, because we don't have to make everybody Muslim. So now back to our own discussion. Another thing which the Imam said, which is, again, is very important for us as youth, and it's a spiritual trait that we want to acquire, which will help us to go further in the path. He says, لَا تَخُذْكَ فِي اللَّهِ لَوْمَةُ اللَّهِ, that you do not let the blaming of any blamer, the censure of any censure, stop you in the way of Allah. One of the techniques of the enemy to stop people and stop the message of Islam from the very beginning, from the time of the Prophet of Allah, was to mock, make fun of, talk about. You're so bad, you're like this, you're like that. That's one of the techniques. Muslims are like this, they're terrible. And so what happens? You end up apologizing, I'm sorry, we're not all terrible. They get you in the court, and you start feeling bad about it. But they don't only do this for you. Governments! They back governments down by going over and using the media, blasting them. You are against human rights, you're this. The Muslims are, please, no. Governments can get affected, let alone individuals. So one of what the Imam said, he was saying, don't let this stop you. The blaming of the blamer. They come over, they talk about Islam. They talk about how bad you are. You know, it's lies. You're terrible. They have in America, what they were doing was, even they made television shows where, you know, you've always seen Muslim men as being terrorists. Muslim men, terrorists, and they go over and kill people. Sometimes they're friendly in the beginning. They had a show where a Muslim mother goes over, and they were a cell, a terrorist cell. So then in the end, the Muslim mother goes over, and the Muslim boy has a girlfriend. He shouldn't have a girlfriend, but he has a girlfriend in the movie. The mom, when the terrorist cell gets activated, the order comes down, the mom kills the girl. They're all terrorists. That's what they're trying to do. So now when you're hearing that kind of stuff, instead of getting back down, now is the time to be brave, as the Imam said, to stand firm, to be happy to be a Muslim, to be proud of being a Muslim, and not to back down. To take on the challenges, talk about what you believe, smile, be charming. You can tell people, you can believe in the wackiest belief, and be, still be charming, so charming to the extent that people can accept it. You could be a Hare Krishna, and then, I mean, not that they're the wackiest of people, but I mean, you can have these really wild, whacked out beliefs, and you're smiling, and like, yeah, but you see, this is why we believe this. And you're like, well, that's interesting. So what you do is like, you're not weirdos, I mean, you're Muslims, so you have logic behind it, and your logic is powerful. You just have to learn why it is that we do these various things, and some explain it to people, and then don't back down. Yeah, that's true. We execute apostates. You know, I mean, and then you go, what's the philosophy behind it? For instance, not that don't go over to execute the apostates. Now, I want to read a very scary hadith. Very scary. So brace yourselves, it's a scary hadith. The reason that the hadith is scary is because this is a hadith which is from Imam Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
To one of his ashab sir, one of his companions, the select companions, the top companions, a man named Jabir bin Yazid al-Jufi, may Allah have mercy on his soul. So the Imam's going over and he's giving him what it means to be a true Shia. So for those of us who are soldiers of the Imam, what does it mean to be a true soldier of the Imam? One goes scary at it. Why is it scary? Listen to how it starts. وَعْلَمْ لِأَنَّكَ لَا تَكُونْ لَنَا وَلِيًّا حَتَّى. I don't know if I should read the whole Arabic thing because we don't want to take up too much of our time. He starts off saying this. Know that you will never be our wali. You will not be our wali, our friend. You won't be a true Shia. Hatta. Until what? So this should become tough because if I don't have this, then I have to work to acquire this. I want to be a soldier. I'm ready. Imam, come on, let's go. Let's get it done. He says, لو اجتمع عليك أهل مصر. If all of the people in your city gather against you, وقالوا إنك رجل سوء, and say that you're a bad person. So if you want to be a true Shia, this is the test. If all of the people in your city gather, everybody, death to whatever your name is, Ali, whatever your name, Usama, they don't like you. They say إنك رجل سوء. You are a bad man, evil. لَمْ يَحْزُنْكَ ذَلِكَ. That not be you sad. If everybody goes over and goes against you, if all are saying that you're bad, that not bother you. The other way, وَلَوْ قَالُوا إِنَّكَ رَجُلٌ صَالِحٌ. And if all the people in your town gather and they all start cheering for you, long live! I'm going to say Usama. Ali! Ali! The man! لَمْ يَسُرُّكَ ذَلِكَ. But that doesn't make you happy. See how right the test is now? You've already have a problem with peer pressure and trying to fit in and trying to be like everybody else and I want everybody to like me. But the Imam's saying, if you want to be the true Shia, if everybody says death to you, that not bother you, if everybody's cheering you on, everybody's slogans, that'll make you happy. What are you supposed to do? وَلَكِنْ اِعْرَبْ نَفْسَكَ عَلَىٰ كِتَابِ اللَّهِ. Go over and present yourself to the Book of Allah. The Book of Allah is your judge. فَإِنْ كُنْتَ صَالِكًا سَبِيلًا. If you're traveling the path of the Book of Allah, زَاهِدًا فِي تَسْئِيدٍ. You're trying to stay away from those things that Allah told you to stay away from. رَاغِبًا فِي تَغْلِيبٍ. The things that Allah wants you to do, you're going over, you're going for those things. خَائِفًا مِنْ تَغْلِيبٍ. You're afraid of what Allah is trying to make you afraid of. فَثْبُتْ وَأَبْشِرْ. Then in that case, then be firm and have good tidings. Care less. If I'm doing what Allah said, if I'm following His path, if I'm afraid of what He said to be afraid of, if I'm trying to do what He said to do, if I'm trying to abstain from those things, then that, if that's the case, I'm doing the right thing, but what? Watch it. Be strong, stand firm, smooth as they say, and good tidings. You're on the right path. Don't even worry about it. When kuntum mubaa'inan lil-Qur'an. And if you want the opposite way, you're contrary to what the Quran is saying to do. فَمَاذَا الَّذِي يَغُرُّكَ مِنْ نَفْسِكَ. So what are you fooling yourself with? If you're going against what the Quran says, everybody's cheering it. The benefit is there in that. Going to the hellfire, everybody, yeah, him! You keep on, I follow what Allah says. Allah wants me to do. Does Allah please with me? Quran? So, what the Imam wants to do is make these robot soldiers, these people who are unaffected by the media, by the press, what's going on around them, happy to be Muslims, firm in their path, practicing openly, unafraid. Question, how do I get there? I know that the Imam wants me to go over and be somebody who's strong so that the blaming of the blamers, if everybody was to be against me, that not bother me. I could go out alone against the entire world and say, If Allah says it, you don't like it, to hell with you. That's what I'm looking for. Now, how do I go over and get that inner strength, that inner fortitude? Be able to do that, be able to stand in front, be able to be strong, not to care about anything that Allah has said to care about. Because it doesn't mean, obviously, that, you know, I don't care about other Muslims' things. And these, no, the things that Allah wants you to care about, you're supposed to go over and care about. But things that Allah said, don't worry about those things. So where do I get this inner strength? How do I find this so that I'm not bothered by what goes on around me? It's easy to say, but how do I do it? Two conditions that we're going to talk about today. We have to see how much time we have and how close we're able to get to these things, because also we need to break before your next class. Two conditions, very briefly. One is from a point of view of knowledge, and the other one is amal, practice. So one is practically, what do I need to know? And the other one is practically, what do I need to do in order to develop that inner strength, to be able to take on this responsibility, not to be able to be dissuaded. From a knowledge point of view, remember we talked last night about the idea of tafaqquh fid deen, to go over and to learn and get that deep insight into the religion. What happens is that if you have had your questions solved for you, you've gone over and you've studied about Islam to the extent that your questions are solved, you might not be able to go over and argue and prove every single thing that's in Islam. And if anybody goes over and questions you, any Wahhabi comes up with any sunnah, know the ayat of hand, no. But if you've gone over and got these things answered for yourself, which means a little bit of giving yourself a little bit of trouble, go over and study the proofs that are there for the stuff that we're going to Islam. So that for yourself, being a Shia is not taqleed. Why are you a Shia? I'm a Shia because my daddy was a Shia. No, not because your daddy was a Shia. Did you study it? Is it right? If it's right, then accept it. So to go over and help and study this stuff for yourself, so that for yourself, there's not a question in your mind as to whether the path you're on is the right path or not. So you don't have to be a specialist in Islam, but at least to the extent that your own beliefs are settled for yourself, that between you and Allah, you have a roof on the last day, you go over and you do that study in Islam. The second thing, which is nice, but I don't know how much time we have to do it, but if you're able to do it, it's very good, is to go over and make a weekly program for yourself to study a little bit about Islam. Why? The more you study about Islam, the more you realize the beauty of this religion. Sometimes it becomes to a certain extent that you read it and you're just like, subhanAllah, how wise Allah is when you go over and you look and see what other people are doing, how they're suffering, and what the religion of Islam said, what the solution is. It's that beautiful for you. So that if we can have that program of going over trying to study a little bit about Islam, that will help us a lot. The second one is going to be from a practical point of view. Amal. To enjoy life as a Muslim. To enjoy life as a Muslim. That you, when you're practicing Islam, you should be feeling that you are on the top of the world. That Islam was here to give you success in this world and the hereafter. And that if you don't feel that you're on the top of the world, then either you have not been taught Islam properly or you're not practicing Islam properly. Can I give you a bad example? Bad example. I remember I went over, there was a commercial. Some of you heard it. It was a commercial. And in the commercial, it was in England. They had a lady standing outside of a bus stop. A black lady who was kind of overset with short blonde hair. Standing outside of the bus stop, waiting for the bus stop. Then inside the bus stop, there were white people over there, and they were standing. And it was England. So over there, they also have the stiff upper lip, so they're looking. Now, in the commercial, the black lady can hear music. So the black lady could hear the music, and she was getting down. Enjoying it. And the other people are just over and just staring. And the black lady is going off because she can hear the music. And the thing is this, if as a Muslim, you don't hear the music in your head, then you're not practicing Islam properly. You should be so happy to be a Muslim, to be feeling that I am on top of the world as a Muslim. It doesn't mean that the Muslim has no problems. Oh, if I become a Muslim, then no poverty, no issues. No. You were created to struggle. So there's going to be a struggle. But you should be enjoying yourself as a Muslim. And if you're not, then either we've been taught Islam improperly, because Islam is here to bring us success in this world and the hereafter. Not only in the hereafter. Sometimes we think that being a good Muslim, practicing Islam, means I suffer here, I give up, I don't do all of these different things, and then after that, the reward after the years of torture and hell is that I go to paradise. No, it's not that. You enjoy life as a Muslim more than others. Much more than others. For us, we say that there is no kuffar when you go to the hellfire because they're not enjoying life in this world. Because it's impossible to enjoy life as you should, except if you're a Muslim. Now, there's a lot of questions that come to mind. Well, what are they doing then if they're not enjoying life? What does that mean? When I look at them, they're dancing, they're happy. What do you mean they're not enjoying life? Question. Or, what about all those hadith that have said, Ra'suddin muhalafatul hawa, that the pinnacle of religion is to go against your lower desires? Or that love of hubbud dunya ra'suddin lekhatiya, that love of this world is the beginning of every sin. So, what about all those hadith? You're saying that come over here to Iran, you think just because you're near or you're far away from the city, you can go over and spread your own side. No, this is Islam. I'm not bringing my own brand of Islam. This is Islam also. What happens is that what we want to do is when we look at the hadith and the ayat of the Quran, we want to try to get our version of Islam from experts. Why do we say experts? Experts because they're comprehensive. The expert won't go over and only take one ayat of the Quran and say, Islam says, to go and look at all of the ayah. All of the hadith. We also have other hadith which are talking about exactly what I'm talking about. And also, this is important for our spiritual development that we enjoy life in this world. So, it's an Islamic principle. We aren't going to be able to get into all of what the kuffar are doing and why they are, why we don't say that they're enjoying life as we should be. Very briefly, again, we should see how much I'm running out of time, so just very, very briefly, what happens is that sin, we've been told in the hadith. First of all, the idea is, one of the things we know that sin is sometimes fun. God forbid. Sin can be fun. We admit that as Muslims. Somebody can do what Allah doesn't like and enjoy what he's doing. Yes! Who said it's not like that? Second thing, sin can even be beneficial. It can be good for you sometimes. You do a sin and you get some ayat al-Quran. Don't say, excuse me, I'm becoming Kafir here. Ayat al-Quran. Talking about two of the terrible sins in Islam. One is gambling and alcohol. And it says, فِيهَمَا إِثْمٌ كَبِيرٌ. The end of his great sin. وَمَنَافِقُ لِلنَّاسِ. And benefits. That great sin! Maybe over here, he thinks, drink one glass of alcohol, then I don't know, it helps this in your heart. Maybe some slight tiny benefits. Yes, you go to the hell, right? Yes, you destroy your family. Yes, but tiny benefits? Possibly Allah puts it there. More than that, sin can be addicted. In hadith, where Allah tells one of the companions, he says, beware of the intoxication of sin. That it, like alcohol, is intoxicating, rather even worse. So, not denying any of those things. Still, in spite of that, drugs or intoxication only bring you to a certain level. They only give you happiness to a certain extent, and after that, it's drug. Normally what happens when people become drug abusers is that they don't stay intently using one drug. They go to higher drugs because they can't get high off of the first drug. And so what happens sometimes when people commit sins, you'd be surprised. You go over into lives of kuffar and you see that they weren't able to keep satisfied with a certain level of sin. They went for worse and worse and worse sins. Why? Because they can't get high off of this sin anymore. So, accepting all of that, back into our own discussion. So what happens now is that we were here, put here on the earth, to enjoy life as Muslims. In this world, in the hereafter. Why is it so important to talk about these things? Because now we're in a situation where we have to be firm, hold fast to our faith, So if we're enjoined like us, Muslims will be able to resist strongly and bring others into the religion. Why are we able to bring others? Because we're enjoying ourselves. If I feel that you're living it up, it's going to be hard for me to go over and say, please come and suffer like me in the hellfire, then inshallah, Allah will reward you in the hereafter. It's difficult for me. But if I'm living life, I'm enjoying life as a Muslim, then I'm like, well, why are you living in misery like this? Look at you, I feel sorry for you. You're not a Muslim. You don't know the beauties of fasting and praying and these things. Shake your head and Allah help this person. You have to feel that sense. And that's going to come when you practice Islam, when you see the results of Islam in your life. So, now because we're coming to the end of the discussion, I guess I was going to talk about even some other things like secrets as to how to go over and have a better marriage life and other things, but those things will run out of time here. So, we'll do the last part and go to our end of our discussion. So, our outlook on the world, even though we consider the dunya to be our enemy, one of our enemies is shaitan, one of our enemies is our own lower self, one of our enemies is other people who don't like Islam, one of our enemies is the dunya. Even though we take the dunya to be our enemy, it doesn't mean we don't enjoy the dunya and enjoy being here on the earth. Rather, we feel that Islam is the only way for us to go over and to enjoy life on the earth. Very quickly, the hadith behind it, after that we leave the rest for discussion. Why is it so important to enjoy life in this world as Muslims? Part of it, I have said that, you know, if we understand it, we feel the benefits, we're able to bring others in. What have the hadith said about it? Several different hadith from several different infallibles that say divide your day into four parts. Some into four parts, some into three parts. Divide your day. One of the parts they say is that your time between you and Allah, your form of worship. The second one is that your occupation, whatever your occupation is, whatever your occupation is also a duty. You're also trying to use that as a means of getting closer to Allah. As a mu'min, you're trying to make a niyat in everything that you do, that all of your life is ibadah. Ibadah for you is not only coming into masjid. When you go to work, when you're dealing with your parents, when you're at home, everything is all ibadah. The other thing, the next one, was that you spend part of the time with your brothers or your sisters, who want what's best for you, but will tell you your flaws. One difference between Muslim friends and non-Muslim friends is that a Muslim friend who wants what's best for you, if he sees you making a mistake, his duty is to go over and tell you that, brother, what you're doing is not right. A real friend would do that. A real friend wouldn't just go over and laugh along with you and watch as you stumble and you make mistakes. Maybe you might get angry in the short run, but a real friend will look out for your best interests. And doesn't want to see you destroy yourself. So it says another part of our day that we spent was with those friends, those brothers who care about us, but will also make a mistake but try and tell us our flaws because they want what's best for us. And then the last thing was you said your halal pastimes, your halal pleasure. Now sometimes pleasure, automatic sexual things, not only that. Halal pleasure, because pleasure is a lot of things in Islam. You go over and you enjoy the time that you have off, your free time, the time that you want something halal, is also necessary for you. And that should be part of your day, and part of your occupation. So if you're playing sports, or whatever you're doing is a halal occupation, then you want to go over and do that, and mean that that's also ibadah. And it's also bringing you closer to Allah if you're doing it with the right niyyah. But why is it important? The hadith state that with that part you'll have energy for the other four, the other three parts. With the halal pleasure, the halal pastime, because you've seen the goodness that Islam is giving you, with that you have energy for the other part. One question. I've heard so much about fighting against my nafs and going against my lower desires. Sometimes when I'm doing something, I may feel guilty about doing what I'm doing. I'm enjoying myself, but I don't know, should I be feeling good about what I'm doing, or should I be feeling guilty because I've been told to go against my nafs, my lower nafs, maybe my nafs likes? The teachers of Akhlaq, some of the greatest teachers of Akhlaq, have given us three principles that if we observe, then we don't have to worry about whether we're following our nafs or not. Because the students came to them and explained to them, they said, look, we have the hadith, which are so ferocious when it comes to the ayat of Quran, following the nafs, that whoever follows his nafs, that Allah will misguide him, and that how do I know that I'm not obeying my nafs and doing what my nafs wants? They said, with three conditions. Three conditions. If we're doing something, and we enjoy doing something, then we're not doing following the nafs, rather we're doing the right thing, which is the halal pleasure, and using that to get us closer to Allah. These three conditions, end of the speech. One of those things is that what we're doing, our pastime, be halal. Halal. In accordance with Allah's laws. Obviously, we cannot have a pastime that is haram. And then be like, yes, I'm enjoying myself, it's time to say I'm enjoying myself, and I... No, that's the stop. It has to be halal. Second, they say that it should be the means and not the end. The means and not the end. You're using it to get you closer to Allah. It doesn't become your life, take over your life. Like, let's say for myself, I like basketball, and I'm like, okay, it's halal. Then now basketball becomes my life. I'm always out. No. It should be a means of getting you closer to Allah. Part of your time, not the end. And the last thing they say is that you don't go to extremes. Not ifrat and not tafrit. With that, we end for now. The other issues, inshallah, some other opportunity we'll try and get to talk about those things. At the end, we'll try and ask Allah that He give us the opportunity to be the soldiers of the Imam in His absence and His presence. We ask Allah that He give us the tawfiq to fight and die in the way of our Imam. We ask Allah that He hasten the reappearance of our Imam. We ask Allah that He protect all of the believers in these trying times, especially our maraja, the representatives of the Imam in his absence, and especially the leader. With that, salawat.
Allahumma salawat.